Good morning, and welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we've got, well, I like to think, an insightful interview for you today. So frequently, people have stories to tell, and we have a guest. We're getting him on the phone line right now. His name is Saul Silas Fatih, and he is a man with a fascinating story. And when I first became aware of his material, I thought, well, I wonder, how is this going to turn out? And as it turned out, it was an awesome story about a man's journey starting at a very, very young age. Saul, are you with us yet? No, he's not. They're trying to get him on the phone line right now. So we'll be talking with him in just a moment. Everyone has a story to tell. Everyone does. Life is full of various experiences, and each and every one of us come from the perspective that we view. And so when we're able to share that with someone else, it is absolutely marvelous. Saul, are you with me now?
Yes, I am.
Oh, this is wonderful. And by the way, your phone line sounds a lot better now.
Oh,
this is
maybe
the gentleman
the
that I was just talking to you about, Saul Silas Fatih.
Yes.
His book is called Full Circle. It's Escape from Baghdad and the Return. So it's such a delight having you on the air because it is a privilege to be able to talk with anyone who is willing to share their story. And, of course, today we have so much in the news that we hear about with the Middle East. And here you are, a man who shares his story that starts when you were 10 years of age, really. But actually, you go even back to when you were born. You were born on May 8, 1938, into a prominent Jewish family in Baghdad, Iraq. And then at the age of 10, you and your brother were smuggled out of Baghdad from Iraq. Let's get a little bit of history about that time in Iraq. What was Iraq like in those years when you were a small child? How is it different from the world as it is known today in that part of the country?
I'll be delighted to answer that, but first I want to compliment you, and I thank you very much for the opportunity.
Well, thank you.
I will offer a perspective like no other, because I'm not only born there, but also I'm of the Jewish faith. And I do a tremendous amount of lecturing, and they are always very, very surprised, almost shocked, at the positive things I have to say about Iraq and life in Iraq. So to answer your question, it was an idyllic life for a Jewish family like ours, because my father was a government official. He was not a merchant or an independent businessman like most minorities in Iraq. And he was sent to Bombay to 5 years of university by the British. The British had control over Iraq at the time. Was brought back as a top-level engineer who developed the railroad system within Iraq and interconnected the entire British Empire in the Middle East. We lived in a street, very exclusive street, where two prime ministers of Iraq, one ex and one present, Nouri al-Said and Salah Jabr. And we played with their kids growing up, and there were absolutely no prejudice, no hatred, played in harmony. We had friends who were Christian, we had friends who were Kurds by background, and I did not know of any hatred until I was 3 years old, when something like a pogrom similar to Kristallnacht in Germany took place in Baghdad. That that was on June 1st, 1941.
What happened then? What was this that changed this idyllic world that you and your family were living in? It was so harmonious. Like you said, nobody cared about what your background was. It was a potpourri of people, and you enjoyed each other. What
happened? Yes. It was a monarchy, again installed by the British. And what happened to change it is that the Iraqis, as well as all the rest of the 21 Arab countries, aspired to be totally free and autonomous after they got rid of the Ottoman Empire, the Turks, with the help of the British and the French Empire. And the British and the French, after the war, after World War I, reneged on their promise and refused to leave. And so there developed a nationalistic movement in all the Arab countries, where one of these leaders, the Mufti of Jerusalem, had the idea of pan-Arabism, to establish a country, one country out of all the Arab countries under one flag, to make it an Arab empire. And this guy felt that the only ally he has in that endeavor would be Hitler himself. And so he contacted the Nazi movement in the 30s and became very, very Nazified in terms of being anti-American, anti-ally, anti-Western, anti-Jewish, anti-Christian, anti-anything other than Arab. And he was under indictment by the British, so he escaped and made his residence in Baghdad, where he purchased a radio station and made it the means by which to reach the population. So what he did, he fomented hatred, told his people that the only way they could get rid of the British yoke is by rebelling and by killing the Jews and getting rid of any minority, because the minorities are loyal to the subjugating forces, such as the Turks before that and the British now. And he became very, very popular, to the point where in June 1st, 1941, a bunch of high-level military officers took over the country and surrounded the palace where the king and his family lived. And in order to muster more support by the general public, they fomented the hatred to a very high level against the Jews, saying that they are responsible for all their ills and all their difficulties and being subjugated by foreign powers, etc. Therefore, go out and paint a red X on the doors of the Jews, their homes, their businesses, and burn them and loot them and kill them. And not everybody responded, but a few thousand people responded and did that exact same thing, taking a cue from the Kristallnacht, which happened in Germany 2 years earlier. The British armed forces were sitting outside Baghdad, about 5 miles, waiting for orders from Churchill to save the day. The orders never came, because Churchill was anxious to prove to the Arabs that he's not pro-Jewish or pro-formation of Israel, and that he is pro-Arab. By that time, the British Empire realized that their navy, which was the strongest in the world, could not run without Arab oil. So he needed to have the Arabs on his side in the war against Germany. And a few days later, after some of these thugs had their fun with against the Jews and other minorities, there was a danger that the king himself would be killed and his entire family. Then the orders came in to save the day, the British moved in, killed in a process about 6,000 Iraqis, and took over the government again and reinstated the peace.
When you're talking of history such as this, there always seems to be an underlying theme of pre-programmed hatred. And I always am...
Absolutely correct. Very good comment.
I think that it is so intriguing that history repeats itself over and over and over again.
Especially for those who are ignorant of it.
It just is appalling. So it's really good when someone like yourself is taking a public positioning, and I'm very pleased to have you as a guest on my show, because I think the one way to, if you will, take a stand is to understand that hatred, I don't care who is dishing it out, it is a poison that will destroy everything, not just a few things, but everything of that.
But it is also not to be blamed on only one particular religion.
Correct. It's not.
I point out in my speeches, and it has to be pointed out to the American public, that every religion is based on morality. There isn't a single religion in the world, and there are over 500 of them. Not a single one of them espouses murder and bloodshed and hatred.
Right. And that is what... That is something that people should question. And it's amazing to me how the seeds of hate are often nourished and supported by those that are absolutely only interested in obtaining power. They want power. They want control. They want to have dominion. And that's why your being public with your story is so important, because it's necessary for people to understand that there were the times when there wasn't the hate, when there wasn't the anger, when there wasn't a desire to go to war. This was not there. Many different things evolved. Many people are involved. And so it's the clarity from the perspective of being able to look at all of the different facets. And I think you present some very good ones.
Thank you very much.
Age of 10, and by the way, my guest today is Saul Silas Papi. This is his fascinating book, Full Circle, Escape from Baghdad and the Return. This is a story, when you read it, that throws you into a different time frame, yet makes you very much aware of the present. They are linked. The past and the present are right here with us all the time. So if we don't learn from the past, we're going to have repetition of the same mess over and over again. Saul, at the age of 10, you escaped from Baghdad. Tell us the story. What was going on? Why did you and your brother get sent away before the rest of the family?
Well, what happened after this pogrom, so to speak, in 1941, a certain part of the population could not get rid of their hatred as before the war, before that happened. They became Nazified, more or less, and they always kept blaming the Jews and other minorities on their bad lot and on the fact that they supported the imperialist forces. And so they continued with this hatred and witch hunts to the point where some newspapers would print a list of so-called traitors, which they named as Zionist and Communist. And these invariably were leaders of the Jewish community everywhere in Iraq, a list of 20 or 30. And that forced some of the people in charge to take the law into their hand and hang people in the street, or kill them, or stab them, or loot their possession. And it became a very dangerous place to live after having lived there for 2,600 years, the Jewish population in Iraq is the oldest on the face of the earth. They not only lived there for 2,600 years before Iraq was ever named Iraq, and before Islam, of course. They thrived. They contributed to science, to algebra, to philosophy, and to mathematics, and all kinds of things. And the Iraqi people, by and large, appreciated their contribution and rewarded them for them. And this is where the Jews in the Dark Ages, before that, the Dark Ages, developed the Talmud, which is the book that explains the Bible chapter by chapter, and it's a roadmap for Jewish life, moral-based, that is practiced around the world. And that was written in Babylon. So you could not have accomplished that because it took hundreds of years to do it and more than 3,000 pages of text if there were any prejudice against the Jews at the time. And this is where I clash with a lot of people who do not know history and who assume to know history. And they keep talking about the bloodshed in Iraq and the sectarian wars haven't taken place and so forth. And I challenge anyone, since there is publications, newspapers in every major city in the world for the last 500 years since the invention of the press, I challenge everyone to show me one headline about sectarian wars in Iraq and the other Arab countries that took place before Saddam and before we invaded it.
Now, I want to go back to your experience at the age of 10.
I'm sorry, yes, I did not see that. So my father felt very insecure. He felt that any time soon his name will appear on one of these lists. So he contacted some friends and put together 18 people, mostly children, to be smuggled from Basra in the south through the Iranian border to a camp in Iran, in Tehran, where children from around the world, dispossessed children, were gathered of the Jewish faith. And there were children that lost their families in the Holocaust and so forth, and ended up in that Tehran camp. We were called later the Tehran children. The Shah of Iran was friendly to the idea of Israel, the state of Israel. Shah of Iran was Muslim, but was not an Arab. As you know, Persia had its own god, and it had its own philosophy, and at one time were an empire.
Mm-hmm.
So they were very proud people, and he felt a good alliance with a democratic state like the Jewish state of Israel, and he supported kids being found and saved, and every time they had a plane load, they transported them to Israel. And so took us 6 months through the desert and through terrible experiences, we finally arrived in Israel. And we were divided up and sent to kibbutz, 15 to 20 kids per kibbutz. And that's where we lived for 2.5 years without knowing whether our parents survived, and they did not know whether we survived the trip.
There was a joyful reunion where you and your family were able to come together after those 2.5 years.
That's correct.
And there was so much that was shared, and there were a lot of tears, but again, a joy, because your family was one of those few families that was able to come back together. And you have a wonderful woman. Let me digress for just a moment. In your escape, the Bedouin played a very significant part. And I liked your comment about them, because you said there was a fear on the part of you, and of course you were 10 years old, for heaven's sake, It was frightening just to go through what she did and be separated from your family at 10 years of age. But the Bedouins had a very strong culture, and they were very supportive of rescuing people and
yes.
helping them to get out. And it gives an insight into the Bedouin people.
Well,
and
it's the old hospitality. It is a true historical thing that the Bedouins will not harm anyone that comes under their tents.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the culture that Muhammad grew in Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, we have to, you know, resist the temptation to call that religion a hatred, a religion of hatred, a religion of killing anyone who's not Muslim, jihadist, and all that kind of thing. There are many, many distortions in the West about Islam, and I'm not defending it, I'm just defending history.
I think the point needs to be made that there are always those individuals, and I've seen them with every religious group that I have ever experienced. You can pick up a history book and read about them.
Yes.
And they will always use religion as a basis for war. They will justify it. And that is something that anybody can do if they choose to do. The key is to understand that most of them are not this way. But all it takes, the old adage is, all it takes is one rotten apple to spoil the whole barrel. And that pretty much is what is happening at this time. So it's very, very difficult for those who are not of the disposition to terrorize and to destroy. But throughout history, if one studies history, you see this over and over again. All right, so now you've gone to the camp. Your story was fascinating. I loved your Aunt Ruthie. I think your Aunt Ruthie was just an absolute doll. She is a woman that just gave you so much in your life. Tell us how you got to the United States and the part she played in your life.
Well, I ended up in Brazil, and I almost starved to death over there. I actually wrote my last will and testament the day before, thinking I will not wake up because I was so hungry and destitute. And that was solved by someone knocking on my door at 5:30 in the morning, offering me a job. But to make a long story short, 2 years later, I aspired so much to come to the United States, and that was the reason I left home. I finally was able to get a student visa to Colombia, and I arrived in the United States on the student visa, and I found out within a few months, this was Kennedy time, that I was not allowed to work under a student visa. And so someone suggested, and I volunteered to serve in the Army. So 8 months after arriving in New York, I ended up in the U.S. Army.
So you're in the U.S. Army. What happened next? After you got into the Army, you were able to get involved with, what was it, electrical engineering? No, that was back in Brazil when you were doing electrical engineering.
Yes, well, in Israel, I was 4 years in an Air Force school. It's called an Air Force Academy of Aeronautics. At the time, Israel did not have time to wait until enough youth graduated high school, went to college, and then studied the various works that were needed in the armed forces. So the Air Force had a school where you graduated high school and learned the profession at the same time. And I spent 4 years there. And so when I came to the United States, when I came to Brazil, I had a profession already of electrical engineering, but mostly it was relating to aviation, but I ended up working in a garage. And then when I came into the U.S. Army, they recognized my certificate as valuable, and they sent me to a helicopter school.
Now,
and
you were part of the First Cavalry Division 15th Aviation Company. This was a famed helicopter division in the Vietnam War.
Yes, I ended up in Korea with the 15th Aviation, and they had promised me college education, paying two-thirds of it by the Army, and unfortunately I was naive and expected to go to college in the evening out of the bases, but they quickly assured me that I can take it by correspondence, and they shipped me off to Korea.
Oh, life is full of adventures, and you definitely had an abundance of them.
The best experience of my life, I think.
So you have a powerful book here because it is stating history in its own way. And again, for those of you listening, my guest is Saul Silas Fapi, and his book is Full Circle, Escape from Baghdad and the Return. You have one sentence that really stood out to me when I was reading. Self-expression surely is one of the signs of true democracy. And here you have had the opportunity for your self-expression, and you love this country, you love America, you really want the story that you've experienced, you wanted to write it out for your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, but you have more than that. You really have a passion for life and a passion for peace. In closing out our chat today, what thoughts would you like to leave with my listeners?
Well, the biggest thing that I aspire to is opening people's minds, because if you do not open your mind, not only are you going to live life suffering, but your children and grandchildren will inherit a bad world. The world is broken today, and we all have to contribute toward its fixing. And the question of Iraq, I love the Iraqi people, and many people are shocked to hear that when I say it. Excuse me. And they deserve better than they had under Saddam. I supported our invasion of Iraq on that basis. I thought we would go in, show a show of force, and let the Iraqi people take things into their hand, just like Bush number one encouraged them to do, and then more or less abandoned them, and they were killed by the hundreds of thousands by Saddam. So I wanted very much to get rid of Saddam. I felt that he was one of the most evil men in history, and the Iraqis deserved better. So, but it annoys me when I see on the tube reference to sectarian wars and all that, and saying we have to give up and all that. I feel that we broke it and we have to fix it. That is our moral mission. And I think America has to go back to being a moral country, and a country that most of the world population aspire to come to. That is the country I came to. And I would support it. I was willing to die for it. And I want my kids to live in a better world. The world has changed, and we have to change with it. If we stay the old dogmatic way, it will not work.
My guest today has been Saul Silas Fapi. His book is Full Circle. It's about his escape from Baghdad and the return. I want to read from your book something that I think is very powerful, Saul. I like the way you put your words, and I'm going to read them as they are stated in your book. We were all one people. We were all members of the same race, the same ancient family. Our original source is one source, and our final destination is surely the same. Why then, I question, are we killing each other? Why haven't we learned after 10,000 years of civilization to love and respect one another? How many millions of us have died in the name of a religion, a flag, a country? Imagine what the world would be like today if all nations embraced in a single purpose the betterment of the human race. What wonders we could create, and what community. Is there intelligent life on this earth? So, those are powerful words, and it's a powerful question. Thank you for being my guest today, and my response is, yes, there is. And it's people like you that are taking the chance to make a stand, that are making a difference. Thank you again for being my guest today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't you go away now.
Thank you very much.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Now, by the way, I neglect to give the information about Saul's book. If you would like to get a copy of his book, you can contact him at his website, which is saulsilasfatih.com. That's saulsilasfatih.com. And, of course, you can get it at any one of the major bookstores. But SaulSilasFatih.com is his website, and you can find out all kinds of wonderful information. I was talking with Michelle, who assists with programming here at BBSRadio.com, and telling her how pleased I am to be able to bring people stories. One of the things that I feel is so important in life is to understand that when people are filled with hate, usually they're blind. They are so blind they cannot see, they cannot hear, they cannot observe. All they know is what they hate, and they will focus on that to such an extent that they will destroy anything and everything around them. And the only way that that kind of hate can be put in its place is to create an understanding that you don't tolerate that hate, you don't support the hate, you don't insulate the hate. You bring it out in the open and put it up for what it is and expose it so that it doesn't have a chance to breed more hate. And everything has two sides to it. A coin has two faces, so you can get one side or the other. So where are you going to put your mind? Where are you going to put your attitudes? Where are you going to put your faith? Where are you going to put your actions? You have the right to choose the side of the coin that you want to give attention to. And that is so important. I had in my own family a member of my family that had a hatred against the black people. It was just unbelievable. And I can remember hearing this stuff when I was a little girl. And I can remember talking to this member of family and saying, I don't understand this. And when I came home from school one day and I had some black friends, they said, oh, this is terrible. We got to move. And I thought, what's the matter with you? These are just people. Well, for some reason, I came into this world with an attitude of who cares? People are just people. If they're nasty to me, I'm not going to like them. So I'm going to associate with people I do like, people that are nice. But hate is something that if you're not careful, if you don't examine, if you don't question where a person's biases, prejudices, hatreds come from. You buy into them without questioning. Then you become a part of what you really don't want to become a part of. And that is what is at the basis of most ignorant action. And I found the more I questioned, the more I learned, and you know what happened with this particular family member? I found out that the reason that they had such an attitude against the black people is because they were afraid they were going to lose their job. They had a particular kind of job. This person was a waiter. They thought this was, they weren't going to have a job. These people were coming in. Have you heard this said about the Mexican people, too? Oh, boy, those Mexican people come in. They're going to take away all our jobs. That's such nonsense, for heaven's sakes. That's ridiculous. What you need to understand is why you fear, if you have a fear. And there are so much of this I've seen in my lifetime. If you are who you are and you know who you are, you don't need to be afraid of anyone else. It's not necessary. They can't take anything from you as a person. They really can't. And what I discovered was this person's attitude actually undermined them in their own working position. They never really took the steps to advance themselves or to improve themselves in certain areas of skill. So they were always concerned that someone's going to take it from them. So they decided they were going to blame a particular group of people. Heavens to Murgatroyd, what is it going to take to get out of the no-blame game? I don't know. I just absolutely don't know. I think sometimes we need to get out of our way. And we need to question many times our own opinions, our own biases, and ask ourselves, where did they come from? Why do we have them? Let's talk about Charlie Brown for a minute. Don't you just love Charlie Brown? Charles Schulz, oh, bless his soul. He just left so much joy and so much fun behind. And Charlie Brown as a character is one that I have just enjoyed over the years. And I love this one story I came across. It's Charlie Brown. He comes up to bat. He's so determined. He's, oh, man, he's just going to do well. He knows he's going to do well. Someday, just maybe, his team is going to win a game. And someday, just maybe, he might be a baseball hero. Well, Charlie steps up to the bat, clink, strike one. Steps up to bat, clink, strike two. Steps up to bat, clink, strike three. Charlie Brown, he struck out once again. He goes to the sidelines, he sits and slumps down on the bench, and he says to himself, rats, I'll never be a big league player, I just don't have it. All my life I've dreamed of playing in the big leagues, but I know I'll never make it. Well, you remember Lucy, his best buddy. She goes to console him in her inimitable way. She says, Charlie Brown, you're thinking too far ahead. What you need to do is set more immediate goals for yourself. Of course, Charlie Brown looks up, and he's brightening up just at the prospect of something positive that might come from all the negatives he's been experiencing. Immediate goals, and his eyes get big, and there's a smile on his face. Lucy says, yes, Charlie, you need to start with the next inning. When you go out to pitch, see if you can walk around to the mound without falling down. Lucy, oh, my goodness, don't we all have Lucys in our life? So many times. We go through life and we stumble over little things. And often we do because we try to get too far ahead sometimes. We're dreaming about what we may become one day. Well, just a little bit of wisdom. Why, instead of worrying about the dreams for tomorrow, have your dreams. Don't give up on those dreams. But where you are right here, right now, live in it. Live in the present. Learn, grow, and be. But the day is a glorious moment, and it's a glorious moment if you want to call in and chat with me. I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are our toll-free numbers. If you want to give me a call at 877-876-5227, that number is open. It's for those of you in the U.S. and in Canada, toll-free 888-810-8322. Those are the two toll-free numbers, 877-876-5227 or 888-810-8322. We also have another direct line of 530-876-3222. 1-800-522-2222. So all of those numbers are available to you if you want to call. Now, tomorrow we're going to be talking about antique jewelry. This is so much fun. Lee Leshner is going to be my guest. It's a lady that has been on my show before. We always have such a good time. And what we're going to be doing is chatting about all of the different items with antique jewelry. And who knows, maybe you've got some stowed away somewhere that your grandmother or your aunt or your friend gave you, and just have a collection. I've got a very dear friend who has been collecting antique costume jewelry for years, and she's gotten some wonderful pieces from family members, and her grandmother gave her a collection that she had acquired. And, you know, sometimes we look at these things and we go, who's going to wear that, for heaven's sakes? But you know what? Some of that is really, really valuable, and so much of it is, has a story with it, too, so it's good to find out about those stories. So we're going to be talking with Lee Leshner tomorrow, and then next week, wow, have we got a lineup. We're going to be talking with Michael Vitez. We're going to be talking about Rocky. Yes, remember Sylvester Stallone and the movie Rocky. Well, Michael was involved not just with the movie, but he also did some wonderful research on what he calls the Rocky stories. So you're not going to want to miss this on Monday. And then we are going to have an open mic day on Tuesday, and then Russell Friedman is going to be my guest. Moving On is the subject we're going to be discussing. And then Dr. Ken Gibson is going to be with us next Thursday. We're going to be unlocking the Einstein Code. Yes, we're going to find out how we can increase your mental capabilities. And then Maureen Caudill is going to be my guest next Friday. We're going to be talking about her wonderful book, Suddenly Psychic. Maureen was scheduled to be on with me last month, and it didn't work out for that to happen, so she's going to be on with us next week. And this is a woman that went in a total skeptic about the paranormal and psychic ability, went through training at an institute in Virginia, and now is capable of doing remote viewing through all of her scientific know-how to the wind. So I know you're going to want to be a part of that and be a part of the listening audience. Be sure to tell your friends about it. And by the way, we always enjoy hearing from you. And if you want to send me an email about a story, a book, something you feel that I should know about, maybe you've got a recipe that is just absolutely awesome, well, just give me a line or two. Just send me a message at my website. Or actually, you could just send it through the email, donna@delphiinternational.com. donna@delphiinternational.com. We always enjoy hearing from you, and I'm happy to share your material on the air. Speaking of material, I received a wonderful, wonderful poem from a gentleman who describes winter, and we're still in winter in many parts of the country, and I loved it and had the most exquisite piece of art that accompanied it. Of course, being on the radio, I cannot describe it to you, but it reminds me of the far, far north in the depths of winter. And this is how the poem reads. It's titled Winter. A naked blue, white beauty covers the earth at daybreak. This pristine sculpture crafted by unseen hands under cover of purple night, so polished and precise. Without a single flaw, its softly flowing grace seems to beckon us to behold something ineffable beyond what our eyes see, an ice-cold perfection, impeccable reflection, momentarily blind us and yet hint of otherworldly realities just beyond our rational grasp. We once knew of such a place, but soon a red winter sun will rise to challenge this childish daydream, and by today's end, most will have forgotten. Beautiful words. Beautiful, beautiful words. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break for just a little bit. Hey, give me a buzz if you want to chat. Toll-free number is 877-876-5227, or for Canada, 888-810-8322. And also our direct line is available at 530-876-3222. Just give me a buzz, and I'll be delighted to give you some intuitive insight and light up your life. And you're welcome to ask a question as well. So we'll be back in just a moment. Don't you go away now.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, He's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227. By chatting, I mean I'll be delighted to give you a psychic reading on the air. All I need is your first name or initial, and then after that, you're welcome to ask a question when I finish giving you the insights that I perceive. USA, 877-876-5227, or Canadians, 888-810-8322, and another direct line is 530-876-3222. By the way, I decided I was going to share some recipes that are known in different states of the USA. And I thought I would start off with, well, how about Alaska? Have you ever tasted sourdough pancakes? They are fabulous. Now, there are sourdough pancakes and there are sourdough pancakes. And so what you want to do is to make your own, and they are so absolutely awesome, it will just absolutely blow people's mind. But this is something that they are known for up in Alaska, sourdough pancakes. So let me give you this recipe quickly here because it's really, really easy. Now what you're going to need are 2 packages of active dry yeast or 2 cakes of compressed yeast, either one, 2 packages of active dry yeast or 2 cakes of compressed yeast, and then you're going to need 1 quart of water. Now, you want to use very warm water. You want 105 to 115 degrees Fahrenheit for dry yeast, and you want lukewarm for compressed. And lukewarm temperatures, if you have a thermometer that will give you the indicator, that's a good thing. 80 degrees to 90 degrees for compressed yeast. Now, this is what you want to do. When the water is at the temperature it should be, then you want to sprinkle the dry yeast or your crumble cake onto the water, and you want to let it stand for a few minutes. And then you want to stir it until it's dissolved, all right? And let me give you a tip here. If you want your yeast to activate, add in 2 teaspoons of sugar, the sugar the yeast feeds on. And so then it gets agitated, and it will make these pancakes as light as air. Now, here are the rest of the ingredients. You're going to need 6 cups of sifted all-purpose flour, 6 cups of sifted all-purpose flour, 2 teaspoons of salt, 2 teaspoons salt, 1 teaspoon of baking soda, teaspoon of baking soda, 3 tablespoons of molasses, 3 tablespoons of molasses, 1/2 cup of hot water, 1/2 cup of hot water in addition to the quart, but you don't mix it in with the quart. If this is to the side. And then you need 5 eggs beaten, and you want those eggs at room temperature. Now, you've already put your yeast in your water. If you really wanted to agitate and really get lively, add a little bit of sugar to that because it feeds on the sugar. Once the yeast in the water has dissolved, then what you want to do is stir in your flour. Now, remember I said stir. You don't whip it. You don't beat it. You just stir it in. And what you do is you let it stand for 24 hours at room temperature. 24 hours. Just leave it alone. After it's been standing for 24 hours at room temperature, then you want to add to it, when just before you're ready to cook it, you want to add the salt, the soda, the molasses, and the hot water. And you want to just, you know, stir it in. Then you want to add the eggs. Now, you don't want to beat them in. You just want to mix them in. Then you let it stand for about another 30 minutes. And then you get your griddle ready, and you cook it on a lightly greased, heated griddle in the same way you do regular pancakes. And that's going to make enough for a family. and it'll be something that'll tickle their taste buds. So that's an Alaskan sourdough recipe, and it is something that is really, really good. So our next trip might be to Arizona, or maybe Alabama. We'll just figure out where we're going to go to next to give you something regarding their particular state and some of their favorite foods. Okay, this is Donna Siebel. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, if you'd like to have me light up your light with a little bit of intuitive insight. I'll be glad to do that. That's 877-876-5227, or from Canada, 888-810-8322. Color. Wow, during the winter months, color makes such a difference to me. I don't know about you, but I like lots of brightness. And living in the Pacific Northwest, especially in the Seattle area, it's so gray and so dark so much of the time during the winter. So color really makes a difference. Did you know that if you wear pastels or have pastels in your environment, the pastels generally, if they're warm, rich pastels, it gives a soothing presence. And if you use them in your interior decor, it's very restful. It's very relaxing. It gives a very warm, friendly environment. And it's the same thing when you wear clothes in those colors. People feel like you're more friendly, you're more approachable, and that you are going to be easy to talk to. Think of the colors that people usually wrap babies in. Those frequently are rich pastel colors. We're not talking about the flat, dull, uninteresting pastels. We're talking about the vibrant, rich pastel colors that are often, like I said, around babies. And it just generates a wonderful feeling. Now, if you are a person that is not wanting an argumentative environment, use pink in your working environment. And pink accents can really bring a lot of harmony, believe it or not, into your working environment and also into your home environment. People seem to be less confrontational and more cooperative when they're exposed to pink. And it is very good if someone has a high level of anxiety to have shades of pink in their environment. Did you know there was a pink room in prisons? When they had have prisoners that are really agitated, they found a particular shade of pink. And I learned this years ago. There's a particular shade of pink that when a person is very agitated is put into that room, they calm down very quickly. So colors make a difference. What about the color orange? Well, orange can stimulate conversation. It can cause a wonderful vibratory sense of energy. It's very uplifting. If you have too much orange and your shade of orange is too gaudy, too oppressive, then you're going to have the opposite result. But when it's a clear, like a golden orange, it's just a wonderful color to have in your environment. And blues. Blues are so soothing. But I can remember being in a doctor's office once. He had gotten some information about using color in the offices to make people happier. Well, the blue he put into his examining room, you felt like you were in the North Pole somewhere. It was frigidly cold. It was a color of blue that just made you chilly. It was not a soothing, warm blue. But what blue does, if you wanted to have a restful environment, really restful and relaxing environment, if you use your soft, gentle blues, it helps you to relax and sleep soundly. It's very good to use in bedrooms. Yellow, well, it just brightens up everything. It allows you to be clear-headed. It gives you a sense of energy. And, of course, green is a symbol of growth and healing. And it is absolutely wonderful to have green plants around you, green tones, because it's very relaxing in one sense and very healthful. And red, man, if you want the energy, turn on the red. Why do you think they have Italian restaurants using the color red so much? Terrific stuff. One day I'll share with you a story a waitress gave me. But you know what? We're almost out of time. So I've got to say goodbye for today and just say, remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Siebel. Life is beautiful. Enjoy your moments. They belong to you now. And feed the positive. Feed the best only. Don't waste your time on anything that is inferior to what you should really be in your experience. Donna Sebo here. We'll talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.